Tina.
What?
There's someone here to see you.
Who?
Open the door.
Surprise!
Do I know you?
Don't you recognize us?
I'll give you a hint. That was it.
Oh my God, what are you guys up to?
We know you objected to adult supervision, but how do you feel about teenage supervision?
You'd go with me to the Violent Femmes?
Yes. Your friends will never know, and you won't have to be embarrassed.
Just incredibly weirded out.
Ladies, gentlemen, Brady Anderson, welcome to episode number 15 of Sabrina's Witch Trials. This is, of course, the show where each week I grab a friend and we venture back into the mid-1990s to rewatch, review, and reminisce all about everyone's favorite Friday night spellfest, Sabrina the Teenage Witch. I'm Alex Adouju. By the way, folks, this is the only podcast you'll hear not sponsored by Audible or Squarespace or Loot Crate. Or Harry's Razors. Yet. I shave. I like money. Let's make a deal, Harry's. We've got quite an episode lined up for you listeners today, because not only is it one of my favorite episodes of the entire run of Sabrina the Teenage Witch, so it's going to be a lot of fun to talk about. The only issue there is that there's not a lot of stuff to shit on, but I'll find stuff to shit on anyway. That's what they're going to play when I run for president. But we have a wonderful guest here today to chat all about this episode of Sabrina Teenage Witch. One of everyone's favorite guests, as I often say, literally every week. The one time I didn't say it was when I was the only one hosting. It's like, I'm not everyone's favorite guest. I know the score here. Chris Adouju's back. Chris, how you doing? Chris Adouju from that great website, Chris Conquers, the media maven over there, writing romance novel reviews, writing beauty product reviews, other things, I assume.
Sure.
Do you still do, like, these are the shows I've been watching, or do you stop that?
I stopped that. I kind of want to pick it up again, because this month I actually watched a lot of shows.
Good.
So I'm thinking maybe doing one. Yeah, I used to do that monthly basis.
But Chris, you haven't been on the show in a while, so let me remind you. We talk about Sabrina the Teenage Witch here.
Oh, okay.
We rewatch, then we review.
I think there was something about reminiscing.
We do have a bit of reminiscing.
Is there like a literal stroll down a lane of memories?
No, it's hypothetical or metaphorical.
Okay. So I shouldn't be walking around the room?
No, really, it makes the microphone's job a lot harder.
Okay.
But yeah, new year. We haven't seen you since 2016.
I mean, you've seen me.
I've closed my eyes the whole time.
Surprisingly, I haven't seen you that much, considering we live in the same house.
We really do avoid each other at all cost. I borrow your sweaters, then my chest grows.
They look better on you.
I don't want to brag. I look good in a Adidas hoodie.
He fills them out more than I do.
I definitely don't. I am rail thin in every direction, which is good in some ways and horribly, horribly bad in others. But yeah, new year, new president. First podcast under the Trump administration. That's all we're going to say about that. But I do want to make a couple of things clear. Last episode, we had a lot of listeners. Some might say 1.5 million listeners. Despite what you'll hear from the media.
Alternative information.
Honestly, I just want to make this clear. Sabrina's Witch Trials is by far the most listened to Sabrina Teenage Witch podcast, period. Hopefully this joke is still as topical when this episode comes out.
I bet you won't.
Probably won't be. Like, three other things will have happened by then.
Those
but
people are like, what the fuck is he talking about?
What's a Trump? That's what they're all wondering. But yeah, I do want to thank all the new listeners we've gotten over the last couple of episodes, and all the new followers on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, everywhere. It's real nice to see. So you can follow us there, if you like, on Instagram, at Sabrina's Witch Trials, Facebook. .com/Sabrina's Witch Trials.
Lots of Sabrina memes if you like them.
Twitter at Sabrina Podcast. Lots of memes there. And you can listen to us where you are. You know, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, iTunes, of course. Google Play Podcast section, where one of our frequent guests listens to us there. And do us a favor, review us in all those places, especially iTunes. If you got 5 minutes, head over to iTunes, give us a review. 5 stars would be nice. 4 stars would be cool too. Anything less than you're just wasting your own time. But it is real nice to see, and it makes me feel like a giddy schoolgirl, more so than often, whenever I see a new review
he
there.
He comes into the room, and he's like skipping, and he's like clapping his hands. Like, oh, Chris!
I must be super annoying because, well, I mean, aside from everything else that I do, but super annoying, I get super duper excited when I get a new review. It's like, oh, Chris, here's every word that somebody wrote. But that enough about that, Chris. We're here to talk about Sabrina the Teenage Witch, episode 15. Mm-hmm. And as you know, as is gospel here on Sabrina's Witch Trials, we start out every review by me asking my guest.
Why do I always forget about this part?
Forgot again. Me asking my guest to describe this episode of Sabrina the Teenage Witch in a set number of words that I choose right off the top of my head. I'm going to pick 12 words. Describe this very interesting episode of Sabrina Teenage Witch in exactly 12 words and a full sentence.
Hilda and Zelda become teenagers and go to a concert with Sabrina.
That's 12, and that's also what happens. Nicely done. Yeah. Although it's not a concert.
Damn it, not a concert. Go to Boston. No, Boston. Go to a signing.
That's fine.
There you go.
That'll do. 12 words right on the nose, and I'm not cutting out your horrible concert mistake.
That's fine. I don't care.
That'll teach you.
If I cared more, maybe I would care.
If you cared more, you'd remember every time you're on.
It's not a concert, but I was like, Violent Femmes is too many, and I didn't want to include the others. And
It's totally fine.
Shut up.
It's totally fine. Well done.
You ruin everything.
And that is what happens here, more or less. Not a concert, of course, but...
Oh, my God.
Episode 15... Hilda and Zelda the Teenage Years, first aired January 31st, 1997, 15.3 million viewers, a bit of a drop from last episode, 9.6 rating, 17 share, and the 38th most viewed piece of TV that given week. Not bad, not the best, they've done better, but still an outstanding episode. We open outside of Sabrina's room where Hilda comes up to Salem doing her best Dolly Parton impression and asking if the cardigan she's wearing makes her look fat. As usually, Zelda's clothes looks good on her. Just then, Zelda arrives and notes that she caught her, adding that she put a spell on her sweater to stop her from borrowing it without asking, and Hilda, with a massive chest, tells us that this was a booby trap. Get it?
Good pun.
Aha! Caught you. Well, I'm kind of hard to miss today. What's with this sweater? I put a spell on my clothes so you wouldn't borrow them without asking me. A booby trap!
As they walk away arguing, Sabrina emerges from her room and spots this sweater sitting on the banister, loves it, as you do, because it's a blue sweater in the 90s, and I guess that's popular, and tries it on, despite Salem's kind of, like, weak opposition. It's like, maybe... You know, the thing about sweaters is... And then he doesn't really do much else. Zelda's spell then takes effect. And Sabrina gives all the preteen boys a wonderful mammary. Thanks for the mammaries.
Get out of here.
All right. Her horrified screams soon attract her aunts, who fill her in on the spell and the hex and the big chesty sweater. And she just wishes she lived in a normal house. Normal houses are nice, although... not enough talking cats. She then starts crying, and Hilda tries to console her, but their big boobies bump into each other, and she's unable to hug her, so Zelda takes over as we go to the opening.
Poor Sabrina. Zelda, could you give me a hand here?
Of course.
Aww.
Chris, you like sweaters? You like giant chests? You like talking cats?
I love talking cats.
You like cardigans?
He looked really cute, by the way.
It's
a big improvement.
Masalem but has really improved by this point in time.
So cute with his little ears.
I don't know about you. It seems like a joke that I wouldn't like because it's really like kind of bottom of the barrel. I thought the booby trap joke was great, in part because Caroline Ray does a great job of delivering it. It's just so fucking pissed about this booby trap.
She kind of looked like Violet from Willy Wonka.
Especially with a sweater on.
Yeah.
Big blue sweater. Big round. But I think it's a funny, it's a funny cold open, obviously, but it's also just a fun little visual, you know. Look,
big boobs.
Not only big boobs. Look how massively overgrown her whole
boobs.
Like up. Not even just boobs. Like,
I know
she's
it's her
big,
whole chest.
Yeah, but boobs. And then Sabrina comes by, not only getting a big boob, getting a big boobs, not only getting a big rack, but she's also wearing her hippest late 90s loose torn jeans in a light denim wash. So she's very on trend.
Yep.
What do you think here, Chris? Anything stick out to you?
Besides what I mentioned? No.
Absolutely, besides what you mentioned, yes.
No. I thought Salem was adorable.
Yeah.
He's freaking so cute. Such an improvement. He's not creepy at all anymore. He doesn't look like a demon cat from hell.
Not so. Creepy at all anymore is how I describe myself on Tinder also.
I don't know. It kind of looked like their bodies, their torsos were inflated.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it was just, you know.
Padding.
I mean, honestly, it was too early for just like doing it on the computer.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The other note I had here
but
was.
But it might have been like an inflated thing because of the way it looked.
Maybe. It looked like padding to me.
Yeah. It was just, yeah, it was well done.
Anyway, the other note I had here was, man, it must be terrible living with a sibling who's so neurotically overprotective of her things.
Shut up, ass.
But let's roll right along.
My things are important, okay?
Anyway, in the Westbridge.
This is what happens when you're the middle child.
You put hexes on your things?
You don't like getting your shit.
Somebody tells me you've been putting hexes on your things and like have been super disappointed when it doesn't work. And like, I eat all your like Nutter Butters or whatever. I hate
you
Nutter Butters.
You never do that.
No, I hate them. Anyway, in the Westbridge cafeteria, we open on Sabrina telling Harvey that she'd love to go see the Violent Femmes with him, as he soon explains that they'll be signing CDs at a music store in Boston at midnight that night. She says that she's totally free at midnight, but that she'll have to ask her aunties anyway, and he tells her to just use this awesome lie that he gave his parents
yep.
about having to go on a astrology field trip before realizing both his mistake and how little his parents actually care about him.
Just tell them what I told my parents. It's an astrology field trip.
Don't you mean astronomy?
Wow, they're paying even less attention than I thought.
It's another in the long line of Harvey's terrible home life.
I mean, the best time to look at rocks is obviously at night.
Astrology is not rocks. Astrology is like, you know, the stars being related to your like...
Oh, yeah. What was I thinking of?
Geology.
Oh, yeah. I love geology.
Clearly, you don't love it enough to know what it's called.
Why did that like happen in my brain?
I don't know.
And
but
I love astrology.
Which
makes it even stupider.
Glad we got that on tape there.
Oh, great.
That's not being cut out.
Enjoy. That's my gift to you, listeners.
Anyway, Libby soon interjects because she overheard them and she wants to go with them because she notes that she has to meet Gordon Gano and even adds a please, which she tells us she's not a big fan of saying.
They're going to see the Violent Femmes.
Yeah.
You have to let me come with you. I will do anything to meet Gordon Gano. You know I hate this word, but please? The more the merrier.
All right, you can come.
Thanks. This is so great. I love the Violent Femmes.
After some silent arguing between Sabrina and Harvey, she relents and says Libby can join them. Soon enters Gordy, who asks if he can go too, and Libby, being the bitch, immediately shuts him down, saying he can't just invite himself. Sabrina then points out her hypocrisy, and Harvey just basically says that, hey, everyone's invited. By the way, my family's terrible, and I have a horrible home life, and I at least know what astrology means.
Fuck you.
Although you're just like Harvey, though, because he doesn't know what astrology is
I know
either.
What it means. I actually like astrology, so...
Rocks.
I read tarot cards.
Okay. Anyway. After everyone says cool, Libby gives us a quick shotgun, and we then head over to the Spellman kitchen, where Zelda is not so sure about Sabrina going to Boston with all her friends, because she thinks it might be a bit dangerous. Sabrina tells her aunties that it'll be super safe, before hurting her argument a little bit by noting the band's name.
Boston Midnight Rock Band. It sounds kind of dangerous.
Oh, but it's not. It's totally safe.
What's the name of the band again?
The Violent Femmes. Which is completely ironic, because there aren't even any femmes in the band, let alone violent ones.
She does have a great, like, escape out of that. It's like, no!
There's not even any femmes in the band!
Let alone violent ones? Come on! Anyway, Zelda says she would feel a lot better if they had some adult supervision, like maybe her and Hilda. But Sabrina accurately points out that that would be hideously embarrassing, and Hilda actually gives us a bit of a pithy retort, which I liked a lot.
That'd be the most embarrassing thing ever. I can't show up with old people.
Now don't try sweet-talking us.
Sabrina asks whether or not they trust her, and they note that they do, but that there are a lot of sickos out there. There are a lot of sickos out there, and also that parental boogeyman of peer pressure still exists, and, you know.
Especially in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, you watched Seventh Heaven. How much talk of peer pressure was there?
Girl, I watched Seventh Heaven before we started this show 10 minutes ago.
Someone's gonna get shot because of peer pressure. Someone's gonna get drugged up because of peer pressure.
Peer pressure killed my mother and someone's robbed my father.
Jump off a bridge because of peer pressure. Quite literally, because that seems like a theme for
Come on, man. Come on, jump off a bridge.
It's totally cool. We always dive into this ravine.
I love how both of our hypothetical peer pressure started with the phrase, come on, man.
I'm sorry. Did you watch Seventh Heaven?
That is how peer pressure works, by the way. Well, it starts with come on, man.
Come on.
Anyway, after they reiterate the need for parental guidance, Sabrina heads upstairs noting that they ruin everything. And Zelda retorts with,
we ruin it because we care.
The aunties then try to think of a compromise for Sabrina, but Hilda only gets so far as a few words into an idea before just giving us a curt no. What about no? Maybe no. Well, we get a lot of that joke this episode. But Chris, a couple of interesting scenes. Let's go back to the cafeteria. What'd you think?
What the fuck, Libby?
Now,
you can't just invite yourself. Like, she's completely just eavesdropping. And also, she's not sitting with any cheerleaders. She's not in her cheerleader uniform.
She's not.
She's just sitting there. And then she's like, oh, I love the Violent Femmes. Let me come with. No, you're a skank and you're a bitch and you're mean to Sabrina all the fucking time. You literally spend all your time fucking with her. Why would she bring you along? Why?
I could forgive you being a skank, but a skank and a bitch? No femmes for you.
She's not a skank. I'm sorry. She's not. I shouldn't say that. But you know what I mean? She's,
also, maybe...
Like, when someone's so fucking awful to you, like, why are you asking me for favors? Go fuck yourself.
Maybe
really.
Sabrina feels bad for turning her into a goat the last episode.
No. No shame. No shame in the goat game. I'm sorry.
Talking about Libby, though, I do feel like this is maybe Jenna Lee Green's best episode so far.
She just wears sunglasses and stands there quietly the whole time.
Little match girl. No, because she's not only really good as, like, the straightforward bitch. Towards the end of the episode, she's a real rancid bitch, but she's also really fun as kind of like this group's bitchy friend. Like,
yeah, it's a ragtag team.
I got strong Cordelia vibes out of this, where it's like she hates them, but she still hangs around with them
because she has. This is the funny thing.
It's convenience.
She has no fucking friends.
She has Cece and whatever.
But they're not really friends. And it was the same thing with Cordelia, where Cordelia didn't really have friends. And so she hung out with the losers because they had such a tight group. And it's like, why are you going to always rag on them then? Just stop being a fucking bitch.
We did miss out on Jenna Lee Green dating Curtis Anderson, you know, Libby and Gordy. Would have been the Xander and Cordelia. I watched Buffy not too long ago, so now I have a lot of those references in here. You might say that Harvey put a spike. No, I'm not going to make that one.
Nope.
But yeah, we get
he's Angel, okay?
We do.
Except he's like the good Angel, not Angelus.
Oh my god, not when Angel turns bad and like immediately he's like, yeah, I'm going to make sex puns because I'm a bad vampire.
Yeah.
That is literally like... To the
yeah,
word,
because
what he
his
says.
Dick was on lockdown, and then when it wasn't, it was like, okay, demon man again. Now I'm not nice anymore, which is pretty much what happens.
Take that, men. Okay, anyway, speaking of Harvey, again, as I said, we get another entry into the terrible home life du jour. This week, his parents don't care where he goes. One day, he's just going to show up in Westbridge, like covered in blood, and we'll all know what happened. He's a vampire, as I said.
Or Riverdale.
Sure. Are you
I think it premieres today. Are you promoting or something?
Are you getting sponsorship on my fucking podcast? Fucking Harry's won't give me a dime, and Chris is promoting CW shows.
Got a little side deal going.
I think this episode is great, and the scene specifically is great because it highlights Hilda and Zelda as parents. Like, you don't really often get that, or you haven't so far gotten that view of them as guardians and them protecting Sabrina.
Saying she can't do things.
Right. Restricting her. Yeah. More often it's just like, hey, did you know you could use these sprinkles and make people tell the truth? Like, they give advice, but they haven't been like that.
You can use this dough to make yourself a man.
That's true. They've been more fun than actually like strong parents. And I do like that because not only does it really build that family structure and that believability that these are actual family members, it's kind of sweet, you know? Like, it makes you feel like they're really looking out for Sabrina, and they do ruin things because they care.
I ruin because I care.
Absolutely.
Did you notice Hilda's dress?
That is my next fucking note. Hilda's purple cheetah print thigh-length dress.
It's not cheetah. It's like lizard.
No, it looks like cheetah. No, it looks like cheetah dot.
No, look close. It's not. It's like a faux croc. Like that.
I don't know. You know what I mean? Thought it looked great on her. I literally wrote the word sensational.
Tantalizing.
I couldn't use it. Gordy's got that word locked down.
I thought it was awful.
Really?
Yeah, it's just like a purple velvet. Was it? I don't know if it was velvet or like, it wasn't velvet. It was, I don't know what it was.
It was just a regular like cotton thing.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was.
I thought it was like velour.
No. It was. I thought it was cut well for Caroline Ray.
It was more the color pattern combo.
It didn't really bother me. It is not in the top 20 terrible things that the Hilda character wears, and I thought it actually fit her body well. I thought if you're gonna nitpick on outfits here,
I don't think it's cotton. It's like, I don't think it's velour either. It's like shiny.
I don't know. If you're gonna nitpick on outfits here, I thought
maybe it is cheetah print.
Zelda was dressed far more weirdly. Let's get accurate here. Just very like school marm.
Maybe because I was half asleep when I watched it.
Good.
It looked. Yeah, I was like really trying to figure out what kind of print it was. It's probably cheetah.
One other thing before we move on, you can also tell that this show is now really popular when this is airing, because if you look real closely in the cafeteria scene, they're drinking real brand drinks.
Oh,
yeah, peep the high C in Fresca. They still have to fake Diet Coke though. It's Diet Cola,
but they can't do Coke.
I mean, if they were really popular, Coke would be giving them money. But yeah. The high C people are knocking on their door. Not knocking on my door. I wouldn't drink that swill anyway, unless you give me money. Anyway, I want sponsorship deals. Anyway, in her room, Sabrina's pouting about how her aunts just want to keep her locked in her room. And Salem wisely notes that he's a fucking house pet, so he can relate. But stop nagging, because at least you get to go outside and shit in a toilet. Not like a box. Some of those things might be from the last episode, but they still deserve to be said. After suggesting she checks out the awesome dust bunnies under her bed, her aunties knock on her door, telling Sabrina that she has visitors. When she opens the door, two teenagers, oddly wearing exactly what her aunts were wearing, walk in. As Sabrina asks if they know her, teen Zelda gives her a hint. That's it. And Hilda asks how she'd feel about some teenage supervision. They're clearly doing voiceovers here. I thought Beth Broderick like does a great job of nailing the voiceover.
Yeah.
Caroline Ray's is just kind of weird. It's like you can tell that she's trying to mimic what the actress was saying.
Yeah.
And it just comes off as weird to me.
It was a little bit off. I think Zelda's was better.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's more just the... She said things probably slower.
Yeah.
So it was probably easier to get.
Anyway, her auntie soon explained that they would go with her in these teen bodies to see the violent femmes so she wouldn't be embarrassed. After Sabrina notes that she'd be creeped out as fuck, Hilda points out how much her teen body pinches.
Ow! His body pinches.
Says it exactly that
well
way.
Well done.
Thank you. I've watched it a couple of times. And Sabrina asks, what are you going to do about your voices? Because you sound like two old biddies.
I don't know. I mean, for one thing, your voices do not sound like normal teenagers.
We can change that.
Is this better?
And how about me? Oops, wrong direction.
There we go.
They quickly say that we can change these voices, and do, although Hilda takes a quick detour to Michigan J. Frog territory. That's right. That's for you 90s WB viewers. You know what I'm
talking
about.
I didn't know that was the same.
I had to look it up, but not now. Like, I had to look it up prior, so I know it.
Great.
I'm hip and cool. I know frogs from the 90s, who are actually from, like, the 50s or whatever. Anyway, Sabrina eventually agrees to go along with this plan, and Hilda gives us a far out, which Sabrina corrects to the phrase cool, which the aunties immediately love and repeat as they strut out of the room.
Cool. Cool. Cool.
Maybe this could work.
Far out!
Swell.
The word is cool.
Cool. Cool. Cool.
Cool.
Cool.
Cool.
Cool.
Cool.
Cool.
That is so creepy.
The best part cool. is Zellery, as we soon find out, turns around and is like, cool. Cool.
Yeah,
starts out, I love
fucking
it.
Knows what cool means.
God, this episode's great. Anyway, later, Sabrina comes downstairs and finds Zelda making some snacks for their road trip. And Hilda just running around with her new body, taking steps two at a time. She then asks Hilda if she's planning on wearing that awesome, awesome purple dress.
Yeah.
And not liking it at all, much like Chris, Sabrina changes her into a very, like, TV-friendly punk outfit.
No, it wasn't even punk. It was just, like, 90s. Like, it was slightly edgier. It's, like, an edgier version of something Cher would wear.
We can agree that it had a terrible red hat.
Cher from
Clueless.
Clueless, not Cher, like...
If I could turn back time.
If I could turn back time.
That one?
Not that Cher.
Okay, good. Anyway, she does have a terrible red hat.
Hilda, bucket hat.
Hilda does like the outfit, though. She calls it cool. Cool. No, she doesn't. She just says it once. Sabrina then does the Lord's work, zapping teen Zelda out of her, like, frowny housewife attire.
It was like a pink
sweater set.
Yeah.
And into a pair of brown leather pants, a striped crop top, also kind of brown, but it's the 90s, so we can forgive it. And she looks great.
Well, I wrote down a full breakdown of what they're wearing.
Oh, good. We can get it done in a second. Anyway, Zelda doesn't like the outfit because her midriff is showing, and she says she's not going to leave the house dressed like a hussy.
My midriff is showing. You're 16. It's okay. I am not leaving this house dressed like a hussy. You are. You're not going.
Sabrina basically says, fuck yeah, you are, and let's get going. Harvey soon honks to announce his arrival, and before the witches leave, Sabrina goes over the game plan and gives them their super secret teen code names, Hillary and Zellery. Their parents were hippies, apparently.
Now remember, you're my extremely shy cousins, Hilda and Zelda. Wait, no one would name their kids that, okay? You're Hillary and you're Zellery.
Zellery?
Yeah, your parents were hippies. Go!
So she's got two cousins with crazy names, and one of them looks great in leather pants, Chris.
They're not even leather. They're like pleather.
They certainly are.
They're patent. They're like patent pleather.
They are patently awesome. What'd you think here?
I love that you don't actually have to hear her walk. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't make a big deal about her walking, because if they did, it would be, because that's what the sound her pants would make.
What did you think? Not just of the pants, but of the scenes.
The breakdown, because they actually match. Their outfits are matching. They're coordinated.
Kind of.
Like, Hilda has a red shirt, mm-hmm. like a red sweater with a black jacket.
She does.
Like a black long jacket.
Some plaid.
A plaid skirt.
Yeah.
And black tights with black boots. She's got a matching bucket hat. It's a red bucket hat. That's like a. That's a really weird fabric that's sort of iridescent.
Mm-hmm.
And a chain belt, because fucking 90s with the chain belts.
You goddamn know it.
And then Zelda has a red, black, and beige striped crop top with a slightly flared sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
And like it's a deep V, but it's not super deep.
Yeah.
Like, it's wearable deep.
It's not like my t-shirt's deep. I'm joking. I'm not that guy.
She has pleather pants on that were like a reddish brown.
Yes.
And a brown coat with a fur collar. She's because hit. 90s was all about that 70s revival.
Fucking earth tone, baby.
All right. And a choker because 90s.
I got distinct like Dharma vibes from Zellery. But
I think it was
in the best possible way.
The coat and the crop top.
And the pants.
I don't think she would have worn pants like that. She wore pants. She would have worn similar pants, but not in that fabric.
I don't know. I thought she looked fucking fantastic.
Crop top.
Just great. Just great. Let's talk about the...
Wait, oh, Sabrina's outfit, though.
Oh, she is the most conservative of all three by far.
Definitely. She looked like someone's mom going to a PTA meeting. She had like a cornflower blue and black floral print top and then like cornflower blue, like a powder blue puffer jacket over it. And she, in like later scenes, she wears a bucket hat and a scarf.
She definitely looked like she had to go to swing by Walmart before picking up the kids from like Gymboree.
Yeah.
I'm proud of that.
I like my PTA meeting better, but...
Mine it paints more of a
mental
picture.
Because it's not quite like parent-teacher conference status, but it's like... I need to look somebody put together and like a mom. Yeah.
Chris, let's talk about the actresses who play Hillary and Zellery. Uh-huh. I thought that throughout the episode, they're both fantastic. Like, I think the actress playing Hillary or young Hilda is probably a bit better, but that's just because she gets the chance to emote more throughout the episode. But I think the biggest compliment I can pay to both of them is that I never see them as other actresses.
Yeah.
In my head, I'm just like, oh, that's just Hilda Beth Broderick and Caroline Ray, somehow young.
It's true. I didn't think of them. I mean, obviously, they are different actresses, but you really do think of them as just Hilda and Zelda. And I think the voice work was great. Like, I think they really do sound like what their voices would have sounded like.
Oh, the girl playing Hillary, especially, like, when she changes her voice from Caroline Ray's voice to her voice, it's like... You're doing a fantastic job of just a young Caroline Ray impression.
It sounds really good.
It does. And like I said, they're, throughout the episode, you really believe that they are who they're supposed to be. And that's a good thing in actresses. Did you notice in Sabrina's room, which is a little point, but this annoys me every time I see it in an episode of Sabrina Teenage Witch, when the aunties walk in, on her closet door, there is like this kind of like banner. But it's a banner of the alphabet with like designy letters on it. Like each letter has like a different pattern on it.
Like a calligraphy thing?
No, it's just like it's like printed letters. Like it's like what you would find in like a 6-year-old's room.
Uh-huh.
But it's got like some fun patterns in the letter. It's ridiculous because she's 16 and not 6 years old. And that's something that was added later on. It wasn't there in the early episodes, but it makes no sense, and every time I see it, I'm like, why the fuck is this in a 16-year-old girl's room?
I need to see it now, because I'm like, maybe it's something else that you don't realize what it is.
Oh, I know. Believe me, I'll show you photos of it after, because I've got those all lined up for Instagram. That's where I should send old ladies photos, Instagram.
Oh, I see it. There's pictures within the letters.
Yeah, but why does she need an alphabet?
It must have been... a thing like that must have been from something
I don't know.
We just don't get the reference to.
Anyway, I do love the whole like let's I described it as let's euthanize ourselves, but that's probably not the phrase. I love this whole plan because as a writing mechanism or as you know in the script, it's not only a really fun use of magic for the episode, but they do a great job of explaining later on why Hilda and Zelda wouldn't choose to make themselves younger all the time. We'll talk about it when we get there, but I think it's not only a really fun idea that's used well in the episode, it's a fun idea that they do a good job of explaining away as to why we don't see it in later episodes.
Okay.
Anyway, let's get going here. In Harvey's Chevette, the 16s drive to the sounds of the femmes, I hate the TV, as Zellery notes how uncomfortable it is in the back, before Sabrina reminds her how, as teenagers, they don't give a fuck about being comfortable. Yeah, hit me in the neck.
Cars. Mm-mm. Be happy you're getting there.
Yeah, listen to the femmes in 1997. Anyway, wow.
That was my impression of the femmes.
That was pretty great. Hillary then asks them to turn down the music because it's a little hard to take. But when Sabrina tells her about it's the band they're going to meet, she instantly tells Harvey to turn it up. When he goes to do so, Zellery immediately yells at him to get his hands back at 10-2. And he basically tells Sabrina that someone needs to calm the fuck down. But she looks great in those pants.
Yeah.
She doesn't. He doesn't, but he should have.
Hands back on the wheel! 10-2, 10-2.
Jeez. Someone took driver's ed a little too seriously.
She's right, you know.
Gordy then agrees with Zellery, noting that when he tells people to keep their hands on the wheel, they just don't listen. And Zellery gives us just a great, exasperated, fools.
Fools.
Just like that. You heard it. You know it was just like that.
I know. Calm down.
Anyway, back in the front seat, Sabrina spots Libby, eyes closed, just chanting Gordon Gano's name to herself. When she asks what she's doing, Libby explains that she's just reminding herself why the hell she's in this clown car before just going back to her quiet chanting. Little match girl, indeed. On the streets of Boston.
Yeah.
Big air quotes on that one. Libby notes how the violent femmes are breathing the same air they are, and all the girls agree that it's cool. Before Hillary notes that it's downright cold and enters into an amazing complaining monologue that ends with her talking about why a bakery isn't open.
Which is Chris.
Cool? It's downright cold. And where are the guys? Shouldn't I park the car by now? And why isn't this bakery open? Stop complaining.
That is me.
It's just every millennial. Like,
first of all, no. I would not complain about just anything, but a bakery. If I'm standing in front of a bakery waiting on a line and the bakery is closed, I would be upset.
I don't know. I feel like it's like one of those things where it's like, I you could just see a meme about it. Like, when Bay complains about a closed bakery.
But that's the thing, though. It's people act as if that's a new thing. Teenagers and young people have been complaining about shit like that for fucking ever. It's not a millennial thing.
She puts the Bay in closed bakery.
We should make a bakery called Bay Curry.
Hey, Audible, wouldn't you want to be on this podcast where I make Bay Curry puns? Probably not. Anyway, Zellery soon spots Libby with a book and asks what it's about. As she reads the title, The Magic Within. Libby goes on to explain that she's planning on casting a spell on Gordon Gano, and when a confused Sabrina asks if she means, like, witchcraft, Libby just dismisses that as twaddle, explaining that it's a self-help book that helps you utilize your feminine powers, the magic within, as Sabrina gives us a sarcastic bit of gold there.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good.
How smart! Libby brought a book. The Magic Within? Now what's that about?
I'm going to cast a spell on Gordon Gano.
A spell? Like witchcraft?
Oh please, that's just twaddle. This is a self-help book. It teaches you how to summon your feminine powers. That's the Magic Within.
Hence the title.
Libby goes on to say that she learned how to put any man under her spell with her eyes, and Sabrina soon gives us a mocky kind of kissy face.
No, it's worse. It's like she's supposed to look like she's having some kind of, like, not seizure, but like she's trying really hard, but like looking like an idiot. It's mostly moving her lips,
It kind of looks
eyes.
Like what a six-year-old would, like, make fun of his teenage brother for kissing a girl with. Yeah. It's like, oh, you kiss Cecily.
Mm-hmm. Like, smushy face.
Chris is giving us a lot of great sound effects this episode.
Right?
Thanks, Chris. An agitated Libby says that she's not going to waste her time explaining or showing them how she's going to use her magic within and starts conserving her powers. Basically, she just wears sunglasses at night. Like a loser. Chris, the driving scene, the Boston scene, what a crazy shit going on here.
Boston looks like the streets of New York on Friends.
I thought it kind of looked like the set of Stars Hollow.
No.
Like just a bunch of buildings, none of them really taller than three stories.
I feel like it looked, Stars Hollow always looked more hometowny, whereas this looks a little more city-like.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's nothing to make it seem like, I mean, I've never been to Boston, but there's nothing to make it seem particularly Boston.
I thought that Melissa Joan Hart was really great in both scenes. I mean, especially when she's in the line, because God, her fucking sarcasm should have won her an Emmy alone. Just the way she says, hence the title. I mean, I loved it. But I
never realized as a kid how much of a, like, she is a sarcastic bitch.
Yeah,
like,
but
really,
I like I said, I think part of that is just
which I don't mind,
a symptom of
the '90s. It's to Libby, and Libby is a bitch to her, so you know, that's fine. I get it. But you know what? Don't fucking bring her along then.
But I mean, she got Harvey. Said she gotta. I mean, he said any Femmes fan could go. Libby's apparently a huge Femmes fan for some reason, which I actually want to talk about right now. Why is Libby so enchanted with Gordon Gano?
It's a very odd thing.
Right?
I don't know. She must have, like, randomly stumbled upon them and just was like...
Because
yes.
She does mention later on that she knows that they're, like, 80s rockers.
Yeah.
I literally crunched some numbers here. Gordon Gano was 33 when this episode aired. The character of Libby is 16. So it's not like it's super weird. Like, girls are attracted to, like, older, you know, band members, but he's not, like, your typical heartthrob.
Not in any way. But you know what? That's another thing, especially when you're a teenage girl. I feel like, not necessarily based off of what they look like, but the fact that someone is the lead singer in your favorite band makes them infinitely hotter. It doesn't really matter how necessarily traditionally attractive they are.
Yeah.
Because they're the front man and, you know, you love their music, you love their voice, whatever, they're just that much hotter. So I can understand that from a female perspective, because I was a teenage girl who liked a lot of non-attractive guys, but for
You sure did!
Especially, I mean, I had certain bands that I was very obsessed with, and those guys were definitely in their 30s, so... Or, like, late 20s, and I was, like, 16, so...
Like, this is... He looks like a hard 33, too. Like, he looks young, but in the worst way. You have to see this episode, if nothing else, for just Gordon Gano. But it's weird. It's so weird. Also, just a side note, why the fuck isn't Jenny there? Like, nobody invited Jenny?
Maybe she doesn't like the violent femmes.
I guess.
She wasn't in the episode at all, so.
I know, which is... I mean, I get it, because you're trying to focus on these people and each one has a set, like, little storyline, and working Jenny, it might be hard.
Don't know if you've noticed yet, Jenny is not fun.
The thing is...
Like, on these episodes that she's in, she's not ever fun.
Literally, she was in the last episode, and it was focused on her feeling like nobody pays attention to her.
Yeah.
And they just ignore her this episode.
I mean...
Take that, Jenny!
And then she's gone.
And then she's gone! Tough road for Jenny, jeez. Okay.
Being a sidekick, not everyone's cut out to be a sidekick. That's the thing.
Not everyone's a Chris.
Fuck you. Chris Congers, bitch.
Evidently.com on Twitter, on Instagram. Anyway, just then, Hillary spots the boys, despite Corey Hart not seeing them. Harvey notes how long the line is, and Gordy compliments how cool Libby looks, which she thanks him for before realizing that he knows nothing about cool. Harvey then raps...
Because she does.
She's so hip with her purple eyeshadow sunglasses at night.
Oh, we will get to that. Don't you worry. We'll break down.
Harvey then wraps his arms around Sabrina, and after her aunts note how cute they are, Sabrina, embarrassed, asks what he's doing.
Oh, that is so cute.
I wish I brought my camera.
What are you doing?
I thought you might be cool.
Actually, I'm warm. In fact, I'm even feeling a little flushed.
He says that he thought she might be cold, but she says that she's good, warm even. Zellery then starts complaining about how she's freezing, in part because of her lack of clothing, which, I mean...
She's got a full coat. It's a long coat.
It's a big, like, wool. It's like a fur...
It's a leather jacket.
My God.
With a fur collar. I mean, around her neck, she could be cold because it's a V.
And it's Boston in January.
Yeah. But bitch should have planned, okay?
Hearing this, Gordy gallantly offers her his scarf.
Also, hold on a second.
Go ahead.
She's a fucking witch.
She is.
Zap at your bag and then pull a scarf out.
Or just zap at yourself and make yourself warmer.
Yeah, but people would notice that.
You
zap at your bag and then just pull a scarf out of your bag.
It's full of hard.
First of all.
It's full of hard-boiled eggs, Chris.
Old magician's trick. Second.
That's right.
Second.
Look at how many scarves I have. One. What a great magician.
No, but pulling a scarf out of a bag.
I know. Come on.
Stop. Why would she
do that, Chris? Gordy gives her his scarf because he's a gallant gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
And Sabrina is horrified and shocked by this, of course, because she immediately pulls Ellery inside and asks her what the fuck she thinks she's doing, because she accepted Gordy's scarf, which means she likes him. Zellery says, it's just a fucking scarf.
You were so upset at that.
No, but I'm a vessel for Sabrina's anger.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Zellery, can I speak to you a moment? What are you thinking? You just took Gordy's scarf.
So? I'll give it back.
No, that means he likes you. And by accepting it, it means you like him. It's the teenage code.
It's just a scarf. You are so naive.
Yeah, anyway, Zellery says it's just a scarf. And, no, because I wanted her to take
you
my...
You want her for yourself.
I wanted her to take my scarf.
Duh.
Exactly. Sabrina calls her naive because she doesn't see what's going on.
Which, yes, true. A scarf is never just a scarf.
They then get back in line as it starts moving for a second. When we fade forward in time a little bit, Zellery and Gordy are now having a frank and cogent discussion about the Federal Reserve Board. Neither of them are fans of Alan Greenspan. Sabrina pleads for a new subject, and she gets it. That being the subject of snacks, because Zellery notes that
bakery.
No bakery for them. Zellery snacks are both great, though. Carrot sticks and Gordy's favorite, and one of mine, boiled eggs. A big fucking bag of boiled eggs. It can't be less than 18 boiled eggs in that bag.
Again, you could have zapped chips into your bag.
But Chris, she's like the Hausfrau. She planned these things.
I know.
She wanted to bring boiled eggs. Zellery then says that she's cold and wants to go back to the car. So Gordy offers to take her back, leading Harvey to throw him the keys, which he totally misses. Apparently it was a bad throw. Definitely
it
wasn't.
It hit him right in the chest. Like, center.
As they leave, Hillary decides that she's going to go see what the holdup is and walks off also. This leaves Harvey and Sabrina alone to talk about how her cousins' minds are blown by Boston, and she just notes that they're not quite as adult as they think they are. He starts hugging her, noting that at least they are alone, before she points out Libby, the little match girl, standing alone, sunglasses on, like 5 feet away from them.
Well, at least we're alone now.
Except for the little match girl.
Chris.
Yes.
Let's talk about Gordy. I like this whole Gordy and Zellery thing. I think it's really fun. I think it's kind of sweet that Curtis Anderson and Gordy, who's just this, like, who's always been just like this lovable goofball kind of nerdy character, kind of likes Zellery. And he's being so blatantly obvious about it. Like, he gets more blatantly obvious in the upcoming scenes, and obvious turns a bit creepy. But
I don't think he was overly obvious about it. I mean, obviously he was
not obvious enough for Zellery, obviously. No. But
he was gentlemanly in that he wanted to go with her to the car. Obviously, that in itself would be, you know, I don't want to say a red flag, but a red flag.
Yeah.
But otherwise, he's just, you know, having an agreeable conversation with her, which honestly, considering his interests. With another girl probably doesn't happen very often, especially a girl his age. So I kind of get that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was anything creepy. Like, he wasn't fucking slobbering all over her.
I also think it's a good plot line for Zellery, just because it gets her out of just being like the protective guardian or the like momish teen.
Yeah.
It gives her something else to do, which I think
is
fun.
And I like the role reversal where now Sabrina has to kind of be the mom.
Right. And that's... There's going to be a lot more of that in the upcoming scenes also.
Yeah. And also, it's fun to note that both Hillary and Zellery do stupid things without any peer pressure.
Yes. But we'll talk about that when we get to it also, because I have a theory, but I think this episode is trying to say something that doesn't really do well, but we'll get there in a minute. Did you get the Little Match Girl reference?
No, I did not.
Okay. Let's talk about the Little Match Girl for a second. It's a story... It's a Danish story originally from the 1840s, I believe. 1845 it was first published.
Mm-hmm.
It is the saddest story in the world. It doesn't really relate a lot to what Sabrina is talking about.
Was she blind?
No, I don't think she was blind. What I think it is the story is about a little girl who's very, very poor and who has to sell matches on the streets, mm-hmm. and whose wife is like really sad because her father is mean to her and makes her sell matches, and she doesn't sell any matches this particular time, so she doesn't want to go home. So she stays on the streets in a cold night and freezes to death.
That's so sad.
And like her last thought is about like her grandma and how her grandma was nice to her, but her grandma died, and then like she dies and then goes to heaven with her grandma.
You're gonna make me cry. Stop it.
It's a truly sad story. It also has nothing to do with Libby standing off to the side. Like, I guess she, like, the little match girl like hides at night in like this nook and stays there by herself. But aside from that, Libby's not selling matches. Libby's not freezing to death or thinking about her grandma. She only thinks about her grandma like next season or something when she gets turned into a puzzle. Great episode, by the way. Look for that review in 2.5 years. Sad. Doesn't make sense at all, though. Chris is actually about to cry. They made
a, why would you do this to me?
Also, by the way, Disney made a Little Match Girl movie in 2006.
Why?
Because they like terrible stories. Anyway, one last thing. I was actually surprised at how unoffensive all their outfits were. I thought everyone was dressed like well for the time. I think Gordy's outfit is kind of funny because they clearly dress Curtis Anderson in like a, what they're trying to make look geekish, which is a button-down shirt buttoned up all the way. But now it's just like hipster chic. Yeah. I dressed like that yesterday, okay? And I'm chic. So there you go. Now to make my appeal to Harry's Razors, because a lot of hipsters like to shave. I'm gonna get
no,
a sponsorship
deal. They grow
deal
beards.
Yeah, but they still gotta keep it trim. Gotta trim the neck beard with a wonderful Harry's Razor.
Oh my God, stop.
$5 off if you use the coupon code GIVEMEMONEY.
I don't want you.
In the car, Zellery and Gordy are sitting, and she thanks him for helping her get to the car and notes that she promises to lock the door once he leaves. But he says that he's not leaving, as he'd much rather hang out with her than see the femmes. He says that he wants to know everything about her, beginning with how she got that tantalizing name, Zellery.
I want to know everything. Let's start with how you got such an unusual name, Zellery.
It's not that unusual.
I think it's tantalizing and very poetic.
It rhymes with celery.
The fact that he could get away with using the word tantalizing.
It's great. I don't know if he actually gets away with it, but we'll get there. She accurately notes that it rhymes with celery, and he says that he thinks that she's just delightful. Elsewhere, Hillary finds a policeman and says she has a question. He quickly points her to the gas station on the corner, but not needing a piss, she instead tells him that her and her friends have been waiting a long time, and she's getting a little tickle in her throat, so she was just wondering if she could pop in, see the band, and then pop right off.
To bed.
To bed.
Like an old biddy.
Because she is.
Excuse me. Hi. I have a question.
Gas station at the corner.
No. My friends and I have been waiting for a very long time. I'm feeling a tickle in my throat. So I was wondering if we could pop in, say hello to the band, and go home to bed.
You mean, let you cut in line?
I think Andrew Jackson can explain it better than I can.
Hey, I don't let anyone cut, especially not for a 20.
He says no, go figure. And then Hillary tries bribing him with the king's ransom of $20.
That Andrew Jackson.
Jackson. Andrew Jackson.
Andrew Jackson speaks pretty loudly.
Anyway, he quickly turns.
I don't know what that was.
He quickly turns her down offendedly and tells her that she has two choices: get back in line or keep bugging him, and she won't get to see the band at all. Insulted by this, Hillary asks for his badge number, and he promptly covers his badge, telling Missy to get back in line. Offended by this, also, She says, who you calling Missy, as we then cut away to Zellery walking up to Sabrina with some bad news. Gordy asked her to go steady, and she's thinking about it. Thinking
she
about how
be.
To turn him down.
No, she should be thinking about that.
You like you some Gordy, do you, Chris?
I think they would be a perfect match, quite honestly.
it would be a cute pair, but he would be batting in he would be triple A's batting in the majors, if you know what I mean.
She's gorgeous, but I think in terms of personality they have a lot in common.
The actress's name is Judith Jones. Sexy as fuck.
Gordy just asked me to go steady.
I knew it. What did you say?
I'm thinking about it.
What? I forbid you to date Gordy.
I mean, I'm thinking about how to say no. I don't want to hurt his feelings.
I warned you about wearing a scarf, but would you listen? No.
She tells him, she tells Sabrina that she's thinking about how to turn him down as she doesn't want to hurt him. Sabrina gloats about being right about the scarf and everything, and when Zellery asks if Sabrina will talk to Gordy for her, she basically gives her the old "you made your bed, now sleep in it" routine. But don't sleep in it with Gordy, because you can't date him. That's basically what she says. She also tells Zellery not to pout, or her face will freeze that way, and turning into a real mom here, before telling Harvey that her cousin has a little problem, which kind of sounds like she's pregnant, but she's not. Just then, Hillary runs by with the policeman, played by Bubba Smith, I didn't touch on, but played by former football player Bubba Smith, chasing her quite briskly, I thought. He's pumping those legs as Hillary calls for Sabrina to help her. And then we quickly go to commercial with her and Harvey just marveling at what they just saw. A large former football player chasing their teen friend. Chris, let's talk about that car scene. I thought it was a wonderful mix of both really funny and really uncomfortable. Like, Curtis Anderson here is doing a pretty great job of being way too interested and desperate. Like, there are no bones about it. He is full on trying to get with Zellery in the most geekish way possible.
But see, I don't think it's uncomfortable in the way that it's always uncomfortable when one person's hitting on another person and the other person's like totally not interested.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not uncomfortable in a he's not being creepy. He's being quite sweet and he's forward, but not in he's only forward in
he's
the
not handsy.
In the respect that he's, you know, clearly stating that he's interested and that he thinks, you know, she's a great person and that she's a really wonderful, interesting person to be around. But
I thought the one line
when he called her tantalizing.
No, not even that. It's when he tells her that I'm not going back to the line.
Yeah.
I thought that if you were to put some like ominous music under that, it would sound like the rapiest thing in the world.
Started like leaning in. Yep. That would be a whole different scene.
It was very sweet of you to see me back to the car. I'll make sure to lock the doors when you go back.
I'm not going back.
Yeah, it didn't get to that level. It was just kind of, like, very well-spoken.
What did you think of the whole exchange between the police officer and Zellery? Oh, sorry, Hillary. Excuse me.
It was fucking bizarre, honestly. Mm-hmm. Because, I don't know, she was so quick to quick to get enraged about it. And he was the same way, where it was kind of like, everybody just chill.
I think Bubba Smith is actually really fun as the police police officer.
He was really good.
He is. He was in a lot of Police Academy movies after his NFL career. I think he does a great job of both being like really agitated by his teen girl while also totally making it feel like this is something that happens all the fucking time to him.
Yeah.
Like, oh God, another teen wants to skip a line. Just get the fuck back in line. Just get the hell out of here. He does also have some great, hilarious delivery.
I don't understand how she could be so, like, how she wouldn't understand that it was not okay to just go in ahead of everyone else. How do you not get that?
I think...
And then throw a tantrum about it. Like,
I mean, I think what the episode is trying to say is, like,
hormones, like,
yeah, teens are naturally like this. And so Sabrina is particularly good because even though she's a teen, she's still got a level head and everything.
Yeah.
And I think is that fun like dichotomy of, oh, but teen Hilda and teen Zelda were crazy and are crazy and they're not even as adult as Sabrina. But what are you going to do? I also thought one of the low-key funniest things, that's right, I use that phrase because I'm a millennial.
Great.
Mm, in this scene,
first time for everything,
is how Sabrina immediately forbids Zellery from dating Gordy. And to me, it felt less like, you, my aunt, can't date Gordy, and more like, you can't date Gordy.
No, it definitely wasn't that. I think it was more like, don't lead him on. Like, you're going to get into a situation where someone's going to get hurt.
I thought it was more, I thought, like, the delivery was a lot more, like, just horrified that she was about to date Gordy, but not because she was about to date Gordy, but she was about to date Gordy.
Oh, I didn't think of that at all.
Kind of smacked that way to me.
No, I didn't take it like that at all. I think it was more because, and to me, I feel like that wouldn't be unsurprising for Sabrina because she has had some like really bitch moments in terms of geeks and in terms of Gordy.
Yes.
But I took it more as like, don't lead him on. Mm-hmm. Like, don't take his scarf because that means something else and you're going to get yourself into a situation that is not going to be comfortable for you or for him.
And she was right. Anyway, after the break, we spot Hillary in the back of a police car as Sabrina asks the officer if her cousin is in big trouble. He explains that Hillary took his badge and that he wants it back. But Sabrina assures him that if she can just talk to her, he'll get it back. And he agrees, giving us a hilarious line.
Fine. You talk to her, because I don't want to.
In the car, Sabrina asks Hillary what happened, and she says nothing, but she accurately points out the conspicuous badge in her hand. Sabrina then tells Hillary that if she gives the badge back, the officer will let her go. After a quick scolding from Sabrina, Hillary quickly returns the badge and tries to get out of there as quickly as possible, but Sabrina, wagging her finger at her, tells her to apologize, and like she means it, too. None of this under the breath shit. Just like that.
Yeah.
One more for the audio treasure trove of Chris this episode. The pleased Bubba Smith then sweetly tells them to get back in line, which is another great delivery. It's like, it almost felt somewhat like fuck you to Hillary. It's like, go ahead, get back in line.
I completely disagree.
I think it worked on a lot of levels. I think there's obviously that like, oh, go ahead, get back in line.
He was really sweet about it.
But I thought there was a bit of it in there where it was like, go ahead, get back in line.
No, I got my way.
Well, take a listen and tell me what you think.
I'm sorry.
That's better. Now go ahead, get back in line.
He seemed really and that was my problem, in fact. He seemed super understanding and super sweet about it, like, okay, like, I'll let you, like, you're fine. I'm like, you just let her off. She fucking ripped your jacket and took your badge. I would not let her anywhere near that place. I'm sorry.
Send her to
you're not going back online. You're not getting in there. Like, no.
He's a nice big man.
He is. And it was not deserved at all.
Shame on you, Hillary. Yeah. Ruined a nice man's jacket.
You fucking zap his jacket back together.
Like, yeah, that would be great. Just fix his jacket. I mean, whatever. You could probably make him forget like you do every time with Mr. Kraft.
We haven't gotten to that shit yet.
No. Anyway, they get back in line, and Sabrina tells Harvey that they're not going to call Hillary's parents, but, you know, she'll be fine. She and Harvey then start cuddling a little, because she says that she feels cold. And the aunties exchange teen horror stories about hormones.
How are you doing?
Terrible. These hormones are driving me nuts.
I know. I forgot how emotional life is when you're a teenager.
No kidding. Once was enough.
They're back. Oh, sorry. All the sounds you're making now can't make one weird sound. Anyway, the line starts moving again.
Mine are instructional, okay?
Sure.
They're demonstrational sounds.
Demonstrational.
Yes.
Great. Anyway, line starts moving again, and after Sabrina teases an essentially blind Libby with a non-existent manhole, the gang becomes the next ones in line. The store owner then comes over and tells them that the band appreciates them coming out, but that the store is now closed, immediately infuriating all the girls. Harvey, then sensing an oncoming murder, takes it on himself to take the store manager aside and explain how, if they don't get to see the band, you're going to see four extremely violent femmes, which I thought was
great line.
Great wordplay on Nate Richards' part, or Harvey's part at least.
Hi. On behalf of the Violent Femmes, I want to thank you all for waiting.
Are we going in?
Unfortunately, the store is now closed.
What?
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 Oh, boy. Can I talk to you a moment? Look, I'm sorry about the timing. You have to let us in. I mean, talk about Violent Femmes. If they don't meet the band, there will be four extremely violent femmes. And I'm the one who has to drive them all back to Westbridge along with one lovesick dude. Do not make me do that.
He eventually just, like, starts begging, talking about how he does not want to have to drive four angry women and one lovesick teenager back to Westbridge.
Like, you need to fucking understand this. You've been through this, bro.
And the store manager gives us not only a weird backstory of his life, but also some awful delivery of...
It was choppy.
It was choppy, and he's doing, like, a really bad kind of New York accent. Like,
it's
lazy.
It's Boston. Come on. It's the city. Boston and New York are the same thing when you're on a back lot.
Hartford, Led Zeppelin, 1973. Go on in. Get out of here with your shit delivery. Anyway, he lets them go on in, and they're all very happy about this. Harvey's... I love Harvey in the scene, but Harvey's line of, thank you. Really, thank you. It's great. In the store... The girls enter, and spotting the band, literally shriek. Sabrina literally shrieks. The band, then seeing the teens, are immediately saddened because they thought that the last group was the last group, but Gordon Gano says that this must be the last group, as they sit down to sign some autographs, and let's talk about these scenes, Chris. I thought that the explanation of hormones...
was just like one and all, let's just wrap this up tidily.
Well, I mean, I think it's good for that, but I think it's also a smart way of explaining why Hilda and Zelda don't become teens more often. It's because, you know, when they become teens, they have to deal with these fucking hormones, and it's terrible. So in the future, if we don't become teens, that's why. I think that's actually, even if it's not intended, it does a good job of covering that loose end. Of like, well, you could have just become a teenager in the future, but, you know,
I guess it's not necessarily a useful thing for many situations, really.
You know? I'm sure there is a future situation where becoming a teenager would have helped.
Yeah.
I think this is actually one of the best scenes Nate Richard as Harvey has had since the series started. I think that this is probably the most passionate the character of Harvey gets about anything.
Yeah.
Like, and I was actually impressed by Nate Richard being able to like have some excited, passionate, you know, acting going on here, because usually the character of Harvey is really so passive.
Yeah.
I was thoroughly impressed. I thought it was really great. What'd you think, Chris?
I thought it was good. That's about all I got to say.
Also,
it was good. I don't know.
Okay, we'll talk about Gordon Gano in a second.
I have some things to say about that.
Those things better be amazing and great, because that's what mine are. Anyway, the band then begins unenthusiastically signing CDs as Libby asks to be placed in front of Gordon Gano. Luckily, she's already there. She then puts her master plan into effect. To little effect, as Gordon doesn't even look up at her until she asks him the great question of which does he prefer, stuffing or potatoes? Chris, which do you prefer?
Potatoes.
Okay.
Not mashed.
That's
roasted.
Fine. I like stuffing. I like potatoes too, but I like stuffing. When he does look at her, she just jostles her eyes at him uselessly until it's what she does.
It makes it sound like she takes them out of her head and then shakes them at him.
She might as well. It works just as well. Until the Spellmans, feeling bad for her, use a temporary infatuation spell, which causes Gordon Gano to call Libby fantastic.
Wow.
So fucking great. Oh my god, Gordon Gano's the best. Before asking to know her name and deciding to sing a song for her, despite his bandmates' protest.
Wow! You're fantastic! I must know your name!
Libby Chesler.
Can I play a song for you, Libby Chesler?
If you like.
Guys, let's do Please Do Not Go.
But I have a cramp in my hand.
And we don't have our instruments.
We'll use these. Come on, it's for Libby.
Using the instruments they find in the music store, the Femmes do a rendition of Please Do Not Go, leading to a dance montage with all the cast rocking out.
Yep.
Featuring a lot of canted angles, and Gordy dancing before seeing Zellery dance and becoming depressed.
Yeah, what was that?
It's great. I think the depressed face that Curtis Anderson pulls is hilarious. It's one of my favorite things about the scene, and there are a lot of my favorite things about the scene. Okay. As the band finishes up, Gordon gives us the line of the fucking episode. Yeah. Here it is.
I wrote that for you even before I knew you existed.
I thought so.
It's great. Before his bandmates let him know that the car's here and they have to go. This causes him to freak out as he just met Libby, and also causes him to make the unfortunate decision to invite the 16-year-old girl back to his hotel room.
And her friends.
And telling her to bring whoever she wants to the Copley Plaza. After the Femmes make their exit, and Gordon gives us some more hilarious line delivery, Libby starts bragging about how well her magic within worked, and how well her eyeshadow worked. Both of them amazing. And Sabrina talks about how they get to go party with the Femmes. But Libby does that great 180 and goes back into full bitch Libby mode. Oh yeah, thought it was gone? Here she comes roaring back again, baby.
And now we get to go party with the violent Femmes!
Not so fast. Gordon said I could bring anyone I wanted, and I'm cool with you and the boys, but I'm afraid that doesn't include the Olsen twins.
She says that she's cool with Harvey and Gordy and her going, but that the cousins, the Olsen twins, can't go, and even calls them embarrassments. Sabrina makes allusions about Libby owing them for the magic spell.
Yeah.
Including because she ate an egg, apparently. But Libby just tells her that she's on the verge of being cool and not to blow it. Eventually, Sabrina decides that she will not abandon her friends that she came with, a decision that Harvey and Gordy quickly agree with, telling Libby but they're not going either, leaving her to decide that they're just more hip 80s rockers for her. Chris, this is the scene of the episode by far. Let's talk about it. Gordon Gano,
oh my God,
legitimately the funniest celebrity guest the show has had so far. For one, the man knows how to deliver some fucking hilarious dialogue, okay? The way he says, "I wrote that song for you even before I knew you existed," is amazing. He's really good at not only doing comedy, but also he does a pretty good job of like being that love-struck character he needs to be.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
This can't be it. I just met you. Hey, why don't you come hang with us at the Hotel Courtesy Suite? Would you? Would you?
Sure. That sounds like fun.
Great.
What did you think about Gordon Gano, Chris? He's great.
He's,
I know.
Great. Yeah, he is.
Go on.
His shirt is fucking hideous.
Brown with like wagon wheels?
Yeah, like beige wheels.
I don't know what the fuck's wrong with it. And a black jacket over it?
I don't know what that was.
He's a rocker, all right.
Oh, God.
Also, let's talk about his voice for a second.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to get to that.
You fucking know I'm going to get to this. He sounds exactly like John Lovitz. Like, as a kid... As a stupid kid, also, I should add, I always thought that the Violent Femmes were a band that was made up for this episode of Sabrina Teenage Witch, in part because it sounds like a ludicrous name, and that John Lovitz was playing the role of Gordon Gano.
I mean, I don't think that I thought this was a real band watching it. I thought it was, you know...
A fake band.
Yeah. Part of the show.
But my God, because I knew John Lovitz from that episode of Simpsons where he plays the critic.
Yeah.
And that's all I could hear as a kid and even now.
He sounds a lot like him.
It's shocking. I almost can't believe that's his actual voice.
We're at the Copley Plaza. Bring any friends you'd like. She said yes.
Hello, I'm Marge Simpson and this is my husband, Homer.
Oh, nice to meet you, Marge. I saw your hair from the plane. And you must be the man who didn't know if he had a pimple or a boil.
It was a gummy bear.
I do remember really liking the song.
It's a really good song.
Yeah.
Like, I've listened to it. The amazing thing is that album came out in 1983.
is before I was born.
This is 1997. I mean, they did have a, I think they had an album around this time, but it is amazing that they're on like this teen show. It's also amazing when he decides to invite a 16-year-old to his fucking hotel room.
Yeah. But
let's be clear.
He was in love.
It's some bad decision making. I guess you could play it off as like he was under a spell.
Yeah.
But holy shit. I looked it up. The age of consent in Massachusetts is 16. So I guess he's covered statutorily speaking.
Well, yeah, but it's only illegal if they do anything.
Yeah. Still, ABC, TGIF, sitcom, maybe find a different way around this.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
One last thing, Chris. Did you spot, and there was a lot to watch here, but did you spot the bassist's glasses?
Yes.
Did you also spot that he had them on a chain around his fucking neck?
I did, in fact.
What the actual fuck?
When he had
fuck?
Them on, I was like, what the? And then I saw the chain and I was like,
Bassist Brian Ritchie. I think part of his like shtick is wearing fun glasses.
Oh, okay.
But
I just thought of it as like, oh, it's like a kooky like rock
thing.
Band thing.
Yeah. And that's kind of what it is.
Yeah.
But these are the most grandma glasses. Like these are the glasses a rich old white woman wears.
Yeah. Like they're the kind of glasses Jackie O would have worn if she had to wear glasses.
I mean, and then,
they
and
were
then,
big like oval shaped.
He
glasses.
Definitely just jacked these off an old lady.
Like he's with got thick the, frames.
He's got the necklace and everything.
Yeah.
This might be my back of the linen closet. Okay.
Just the glasses.
The glasses.
Oh no.
I might be able to do. I might give myself the power to do that.
You wanna talk about my. Well, maybe we should save it till then.
Okay. Anything else to add here? Because there's one thing I want to talk about. Did you spot the little like neon signs in the background that just says like rock and pop and one said rap? It's great.
But that is very much how like signing setups are. Because I remember going to one when I was a teenager and it is like just a table that they're sitting at and you basically just like a line and they just herd
you file
you through. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's get back to this, Chris. Libby basically says, fuck you all. I'm going to go hang out with the band. But the aunties remember that they can't just let her go on her own. So Zellery uses her feminine wiles to convince poor Gordy to go along with her. Later in the car, the aunties are asleep in the back as Harvey tells Sabrina that she can sit a little bit closer if she wants. But she just tells him not tonight, which, again,
mom,
super sexual also. At home, Zellery asks if her and Sabrina can talk, but she just tells her, you know, maybe next week, and heads upstairs. In the kitchen, Hillary and Zellery reflect on how they ruined Sabrina's night, and Hillary does that what if no routine again, trying to think of how to apologize. They then decide to change into their real bodies, and upon doing so, run away screaming for some reason because they're, I guess, still wearing the
scantily
teen clothes
clad.
But they were wearing that the whole time.
They were fine.
Yeah. They also look fine. It's true. Yeah. They don't look weird in them. In her room, Sabrina brushes her hair as her aunts enter trying to apologize for what they did. She says that she's glad to see them back in what passes for normal, and they say that they feel they owe her some fun and zap in a dirt devil. Sabrina, confused, asks if she's supposed to clean the house because she doesn't consider that a jolly good time. But her aunts explain that they're going to let her fly as modern witches use vacuums since they're faster and more efficient. Is there fuel? How do you fuel up a broom? How does that work?
I guess in terms of magic.
They're more magically
efficient. Yeah.
Yep. It's the worst commercial for Lucky Charms. Anyway, Sabrina's shocked at all this. But they explain that she showed them tonight how grown up she was. And most importantly, she called them her friends.
Yes.
Very complicated to do. Kind of sweet, though. Kind of sweet moment. They hug. It's all very nice. Sabrina soon hops on the vacuum and with a fully inflated bag begins to rise as Hilda warns her not to flood her vacuum. Important to know. She then heads towards the window, which opens magically, and she flies out. Very slowly, because it's obviously like a forklift, like lifting the vacuum up very slowly. But she heads out the window as her aunts wave. We then get some pretty not great green screen and bad background music as we see Sabrina flying over Boston before she decides to buzz the Copley Plaza, where we then see Libby and one crazy night in the rock star's hotel room. Basically, they're just watching some
Ren
great
90s.
It's Ren and Stimpy. They're watching some real fun 90s animation. And Gordy is just covered in Violent Femmes merch, which I loved. Libby tries to get Gordon to play another song, but he's not into that because he's having too much fun watching some great 90s animation. Chris.
Yeah.
All of this.
Yeah.
Everything. What did you think?
So, my problem with the whole vacuum thing mm-hmm. was that there's obviously a pause. So there's like a cut mm-hmm. between when they suggest she use a vacuum and she actually does.
Yep.
And it's obvious that they've instructed her on how to fly it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Why the fuck didn't she change out of her nightie? Like her old granny nightie. Why? Like, nah, she put on sneakers.
Sure.
She has white sneakers on.
Maybe she sleeps in sneakers. She's afraid of fires.
I don't think so. But she put on white sneakers, but didn't think, hey, you know, maybe pants might be a better thing.
Also, it doesn't make sense because, like, you would think that she would somehow, like, be magically blocked from mortals seeing her fly. But no, like in the next scene.
Exactly, which is why. Why not wear something slightly more inconspicuous?
Like all black. Yeah. A little black cap.
I mean, like you would blend in better with the night sky rather than a fucking white billowing nightie.
It's so dumb. Is it just me? Or is it pretty obvious that the writers were like, okay, well. We might have made a mistake having Libby go to the hotel room or the way that scene was written. So we have to make it the hotel room seem super safe and child friendly. So not only will they watch cartoons, but they'll literally be eating milk and cookies.
I guess that could be an element, but I think it's more of a screw you to Libby because she thought it was going to be the super glamorous, like super awesome thing.
It's subverting expectations.
Yeah, because the whole time... The whole episode, she expected to have him fall at her feet because she had these feminine powers that she was going to harness, and that didn't work. And Sabrina helped her, but she screwed them over. Mm. So in the end, you really have to learn that she's not going to get what she wants.
Yeah.
Even if she, or what she expected. I think that's also a way to teach teens that, you know, things aren't always what you expect them to be. Mm-hmm. Things aren't as glamorous as you expect them to be. Things aren't as cool as you're going to expect them
sometimes
to be.
Sometimes when you're waiting in line, you have to eat a boiled egg.
I mean,
you don't want a boiled egg, but you have to eat it.
Things tend to sound a lot more glamorous and fun
mm-hmm.
in your mind than what they actually are. And hanging out with rock stars isn't going to be, you know, partying and them playing songs for you and dancing. It's going to be
them watching Ren and Stimpy.
Chilling the fuck out at probably 3 a.m. because the thing was supposed to start at midnight. So.
I do love it. They just like festoon. I use the word festoon Gordy in Violent Femmes merchandise. Amazing. And it's like the ugliest 90s merchandise too. Yeah. It's like black with vibrant green. It looks like a Goosebumps shirt. I love it.
So why don't we talk about my favorite or
least favorite?
Least favorite part of the scene, I guess.
Please.
Libby's outfit.
Yeah. We hadn't touched on it till now. I thought it was fine for the character of Libby.
Okay. Libby's wearing a very 70s looking zip up.
Yeah.
It's a coordinate set. So the top, it looks like it could be a dress, but it's really a top and a mini skirt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I'm pretty sure because tops like that were actually very popular in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had one that was similar. I mean, it was a printed one. It wasn't like all one color, but I think I had one very similar, like with that ring pull up thing. They were super popular and they were polyester. It was like straight 70s revival.
Right.
So she's
Darman Greg.
She's got this blue, like with a very defined, starched, big collar,
mm-hmm.
zip up.
It is a pretty big collar.
Top and skirt set. That's blue with eyeshadow to match
yes,
and
it is.
A thick-ass scrunchie.
Oh, man. I didn't
even
see
match.
That. And her you hair, loved it all.
Her hair is like, she's got a really high pony, but like not like a sexy high pony, like a very 90s high pony where it's kind of not sloppy, but like not as, you know, mm-hmm. with her like super tall scrunchie. Because you can tell those scrunchies were long and thick. So you could wrap them around your hair like four times, but then you end up
wrap
with
around
like,
your hair.
A giant, like a giant thing of just blue band.
Yeah.
And then, because that's not enough.
She's got boots to match, too,
doesn't
she?
She's got purple go-go boots on.
She sure does.
Because she's going full, like, late 60s, 70s.
She's trying to appeal to Gordon Gano. He was popular in the early 80s.
She's trying, because I get it, they're going, it's a rock band, so she's going for, like, a very, like, Woodstocky sort of, like, disco.
Yeah.
Like, it's a go-go outfit. It really is.
Oh, it is.
I mean, it's more...
But it felt of the 90s also.
No, yeah. Because like I said, there was definitely a big 70s revival in the 90s. Mm-hmm. It was definitely something that people could have worn and that people could have thought was cool. But looking back at it, it's just like,
what the
fuck, girl?
Fashions have probably improved over time.
And it is the combo of blue eyeshadow and then all blue, where it's like, she's like, there's a lot of violet from... from Willy Wonka going on in this episode.
Wouldn't you love to have watched Wibby's Get Ready With Me video though, Chris?
No.
It would have been pretty great.
I'm going to take this blue eyeshadow and I'm going to blend it all the way up to my eyebrows.
I'm just going to cover my eyes
just,
with it.
Just ignore where your crease starts. We're just going to keep going way above that.
One last thing. It was here, but it occurred to me because when...
and she's got a choker because 90s.
She does. It was here that it occurred to me when Wibby was trying to like magic Gordon, like re-hypnotize him, that Jenny Green's acting for like using her magic within is just like her jiggling her eyes like one would jiggle their tits, but
like it's just her whole head.
Yeah,
because you obviously can't jiggle your eyes.
No,
you can like look like back and forth, but that right. looks really stupid. So she like wiggles her head at him and stares.
It doesn't work, go figure.
Yeah. I mean, you're much better off just staring than trying to do that.
Yes, you are. Maybe do a go-go dance in your boots. After Gordon tells Wibby to get her eyes checked when she tries that magic within, she tells Gordy that she's ready to leave, but he says he's busy watching TV. The femmes then tell Gordy that he's, quote, the coolest. And when Wibby looks out the hotel window, she spots Sabrina flying across the sky and thinks that she probably should get her eyes checked. Sabrina notes that she can see her house as the scene closes.
Which is weird because yes, she's in Boston.
Quite a far away. As the credits roll, Sabrina arrives home as an interested Zelda asks how her day was before suspiciously asking how literally everyone but Gordy is. Sabrina tells her that she can just ask if she's interested in Gordy, and... Zelda asks if he mentioned her, Zellery, and Sabrina tells her that, in fact, he did, before letting her know that he wants his fucking scarf back. And that's where the episode closes here, Chris. Any final thoughts? Anything in that scene?
I thought that's really realistic, because even when you don't like someone...
You want your shit back?
No, if you don't like someone, but you know they like you, you might be more interested in knowing...
A little, yeah. Yeah, we're petty monsters, aren't we?
We just want to be loved.
All right, Chris, that was the episode. What did you think as a whole?
I really liked it.
Yeah.
It's always been one of my favorites.
Tough to beat. You know, yes. We rank our episodes on Sabrina's Witch Trials, our episodes of Sabrina Teenage Witch, on a very specific scale, the TGIF scale, this Good I Feel scale, 1 to 5 scale, each number having a corresponding TV show from a TGIF lineup. You definitely know all of them. You only need to know one because you know which one it is. Chris, how would you rank this episode of Sabrina the Teenage Witch on my TGIF scale?
I'm trying to remember which one it is.
It's a Boy Meets World. Boy Meets World is 5 out of 5.
I think it's a 4.
It cannot be a 4. Family Matters is a 4, by the way.
Okay.
But it's got to be a 5 out of 5. Everything is great in this episode. There's nothing that doesn't work. Everything... betters the overall story. The celebrity guests are hilarious.
I think what bothers me is Libby. That Libby gets to go. I'm sorry, but
It works for the overall story.
It does. But at the same time, I'm like, she's a fucking... I'm going to use a bad word.
You can say bitch. I want to call her that bitch.
It was going to be worse. To everyone, she literally has spent the previous 14 episodes treating you like garbage.
Yes.
Making your life miserable. And then you're going to go buddy-buddy with her. Like, I don't understand.
It's needed. It works well. I think it's amazing. We talked about how good the guest actresses are for Hillary and Zellery, and Gordon Gano is fantastic in it. The violent femmes are funny for their one, like each one of them gets one little line in the background because the bassist has a hand cramp at one point. Everything's funny. Everything lands. It's a great story overall. The family unit is really strengthened with the storytelling. I think it's a near perfect episode of Sabrina the Teenage Witch. And that's why I give it a 5 out of 5. A Boy Meets World. Chris, you had it at Family Matters?
Yeah.
You're insane.
You're trying to...
You're absolutely insane. All right, Chris. Main event here on Sabrina's Witch Trials, however. Back of the Linen Closet, our episodic award for each episode's biggest fashion flop. Chris?
Yeah.
I didn't think we had that much to choose from this episode, but I cannot not induct fucking Brian Ritchie's old lady glasses into the back of the linen closet. They're going to hang there on their little chain where they belong, right in the back. Chris, what was your induction?
It's so hard because I really want to give it to Libby.
Okay.
Because that outfit was just all kinds of ridiculous. But at the same time, it's one of those things where it's like so bad that it's good because it's memorable and like it stands out. So I feel like it's probably going to have to go to Gordon Gano's shirt.
Okay, the wagon wheel.
Yeah, that was pretty fucking awful.
It was weird. And he's wearing like brown pants too.
It was not good. Yeah. And I feel like Libby's was not good, but Libby's was at least interesting in a not repulsive way. Mm-hmm. Just like, holy shit, that's a lot going on.
Right. And somebody would have legitimately bought that in the 90s as opposed to Gordon Gano's shirt.
Yeah, I feel like it could have been something that like a cool girl would have worn, even though it looks fucking... weird.
Wouldn't age well, certainly.
No.
That's the show. Chris, thank you so much for being here. I want to give you a second to plug Chris Conkers and everywhere people can listen to. They can't listen to you. You can listen to you here on Sabrina's Witch Trials, but they can read your stuff over at chrisconkers.com, of course.
They can.
And they can see your Instagram, Chris Conkers, on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And
on Twitter.
I was going to give you a second to plug, but I'm literally plugging all your shit.
Yeah, it's fine. Go for it.
And they can also follow you on Twitter at Chris Conkers.
Yes.
Where they can also see all your wonderful posts.
Yep. I posted about how I couldn't sleep the other night.
Episode 16. You really?
Yeah, I couldn't sleep because I had cold brew at 11 p.m. And I was like,
bad decisions.
It's 4 in the morning.
Oh, lady Chris,
might as
cold
well
brew.
Tweet. Good classic Trump tweeting time. Let me just go.
Chris was giving it to CNN at 4 in the morning. Episode 16 will be next, of course, and it will be a fun one. Mars Attracts. A great pun, so how could it be bad at all?
Also a great episode.
We'll talk about that next time on The Witch Trials. But I want to thank everybody for listening to this episode, and thank everybody for subscribing and reviewing and all the great stuff. Thank you very much. And
you're welcome.
Thanks, Chris. You're great. You're welcome, oh. Thanks. And one last thing. We will see you in the other realm.
You know what I'm saying? You've been there, right? Hartford, Led Zeppelin, 1973. Go on.